Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. We're inspiring conversations for the unafraid. I'm Janice McDonald, founder of the Beacon Agency, author, and global champion for women. Why am I making this show? Because I want to share the inspiring stories of women leaders in business, arts and culture, politics, and more with all of you. Hear how they've chosen to go forward and be bold and make the world a better place, even when it wasn't easy to do. Subscribe now wherever you find podcasts. Hey, everybody, I'm Janice McDonald. Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. Today, I'm joined by the dynamic Solange Tui Chimay. She is president and CEO of Elevate International, a global nonprofit. She's going to tell us all about that and so much more. Welcome, Solange.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited. Thank you.
We have lots to talk about. And thank you and welcome to our listeners from around the world, including Ireland, Australia, USA, Spain, France, and so many more countries. We want our community to grow. Please tell your friends and follow us on Instagram. Thank you also to our amazing sponsors, 30% Club Canada, ADGA, and BDC. So, Solange, Elevate International, you started this exciting organization to inspire, empower, and elevate women and girls. So we share that passion. I had a chance to do a keynote at one of your conferences. Mm-hmm. I was so honored.
You were fabulous.
Oh, thank you. But what inspired you to start this really important and frankly, fast growing and influential organization?
You know what? I think it's one of those things. As women, we underestimate the power that we have. And the funniest thing is that this organization is built in the middle of my mat leave.
Really?
So right there, after having four children, I just had my last one and I'm nursing. And Samantha Munsemi and Sandra.
Oh, yes.
Invite me to be a speaker at the Women in Business Conference. Mm-hmm. And I killed it. Like, I don't know if it's because I had been home nursing for a while, but I killed it. Like, I was so good that even me, I was like, yeah, that was like real contribution. And then I went home and I thought to myself, what are you doing? How come you don't feel like this all the time? Mm. And is it normal that this, you know, we pick this 9 to 5s where we're like, it pays the bills, but what is your purpose? And of course, as many people in our community knew, we had just lost a daughter the year before. So really giving true meaning to my life was going to be a very important part on my healing, on how I redefine life and bring joy. And a big part of it wasn't going to depend on anyone to fix it. It was really going to depend on me to find a new sense of happiness and belonging in this world that has sort of challenged me so many times. And so, and I remember so many people after I gave that keynote, and they came back sort of asking me, oh my gosh, I would love for you to talk to my daughter. I would love for you, even if you could coach my daughter on what is leadership so that she can grow up and be a leader. And right. So then there was this seed in my brain already that I needed to do something for girls. And for the longest time, I thought that it was something for girls living in poverty or girls living in unfortunate circumstance, which is still a passion. But I immediately knew that it was around girls being leaders because I didn't think that I had done anything special in my life, but I knew that it was that belief in myself and trying different things that had led me to become the leader that I was. So as I was developing this program for women in leadership, I remember I was in a coaching group with Lisa Lauder. And she said, you know, what is it that attracts you to this project? And when I talked about it, she looked at me, she said, Solange, for the first time, I see fire in you. And so I knew I was onto something. So as I'm creating this program for girls, I'm doing research and I'm learning all about it and realizing, oh, definitely girls don't grow up believing and trusting that they're leaders too, because who we see as leaders, they don't look like them. They don't have the same background as them. But then the biggest problem was we have a shortage of female CEOs. we have a shortage of female who are executive in senior leadership position. And when we're looking at the most admired, most, you know, powerful, most influential leaders of this world that are shaping and moving this world and contributing to the economy at a larger scale, like 80% is men. Actually, in some cases, it's like 90% is men. So then I told myself, how can I create an organization for girls to be leaders only to throw them in a world where women are not amongst the leaders of our society? So that was the birth of Elevate International, that it was really going to focus on women and girls becoming leaders. So how do we start shifting and changing that 12% that we've had in Canada for so long of women in senior leadership position so that more girls can see leaders who are women? And how do we start building these strong and powerful and yet heart-centered programs for girls so that they start contributing in the community from such a young age? And that was really the birth of Elevate. It seemed like such a small thing, but now I'm realizing that it was such a big beast. Maybe I was dreaming too large, but yeah.
No such thing. So your passion is so clear and the impact you're having already is big. You talked about girls. Let's hear about this girl, Solange, as a girl. Take us back to your 10-year-old self. Where were you living? What were you interested in? Big reader, sports girl. What was Solange like?
10-year-old me, it was definitely a great time in my life because it was right before genocide in Rwanda. Mm. So it was still at a time where I still had a beautiful home, a loving family, even though you could feel the insecurities of the war that was building in our society. But as a kid, you were so protected from it that I was still having big dreams. And I think for me as a young girl, one thing was always clear. My dreams was always on a big stage. I even remember my first communion.
You're doing that.
Like, I'll never forget my first communion. I think I volunteered to lead the choir at this big church. I don't know
of
what
course,
I was doing, but I was just this little fearless, you know, kid that just said, I'll do it. And I didn't even tell anything to my parents. So they're coming at this communion and they watch this little girl where they've put a little stepper and I'm just leading the way and I'm having the time of my life.
And so do you still sing today?
Not as often, mm-hmm. which is sad, eh? When do we stop singing?
I don't know. I still sing.
I sing with my daughters, but not in public. So I sing with my daughters. And I think if you ever follow me on Instagram, you'll see glimpse videos of us dancing in the kitchen often. Mm-hmm. So it was always dancing.
Well, my producer, Lisa, and I were just talking about dancing in the kitchen.
Yes, it's perfect.
Yes, so, such a feel good.
Yes.
Although she adds the mirror to it.
Oh, man. Like I go full in, like all out. And it became my escape later because in every country we moved, I used dancing as my way of getting new friends. So I was really good at learning cultural dances in any given country that you would put me in. So my
10-year-old
self.
Give us an example. What are some of the dances?
So I dance Kinyarwanda really well, the cultural ballet dance. I do that really well. I actually danced at a school in Congo when I started there. And I was a semi-professional dancer in Kenya, both for the Rwandese community and the Kenyan community. I even went to the national competition for schools in Kenya who would unite to sing and dance. So, yeah. So dance was my thing.
Extraordinaire. Well, I see it in your posture. You stand tall, both on the stage, but also just right there in your seat. Perfect posture. Your mother would be proud.
Thank you. No, so my 10-year-old self dream big. I've always dreamt really, really big. And it was always about making people smile. Like, I always remember that, even when I close my eyes. It's looking at the audience of thousands of people, and they're either inspired or they feel loved. And that was my thing, and it's been my thing since then. All I remember was that I cared for the world, I wanted to make a difference, and I was on a world stage.
And you moved when? When did moving start in your life?
So moving started during genocide in 1994. And then we moved from Congo. We escaped in Congo. And then we spent some time in Uganda. A little bit. We passed through Uganda. And then we also spent some time in Kenya and then moved here. So in a matter of two years, I went in about like four different schools in four different countries. So that was sort of, yeah, moving for me. And it went from sort of from having it all to having nothing at all and to figuring out like where's the next meal going to come from and where do we sleep.
How has that uncertainty from that time in your life impacted you? So you know, it must leave a long shadow, I would think.
And I would say, had you asked me this question maybe 10 years ago, I would have probably give you the sort of the nice speech of, you know, you're grateful to survive, and that's that. Because I think for the longest...
But that's still true.
It's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. For the longest time in my life, I felt that I was basically just kind of touching the surface of it because I didn't want to feel what that pain felt like. So because we had done so much of survival, and country to country, when you're a refugee, you're treated fairly badly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're even hunting refugees to get whatever they have. So, you know, it's now that I have children that I feel like I haven't done that story justice. And for some reason, as I created Elevate International, it became more evident that I needed to give true meaning to that story because that is what shapes me and that what allows me sometimes to make sure I'm defending this organization to stay the course. Because we're in an era where everybody's talking about women and everybody's like it's creating things around women. And you've seen this before, is that we go through phases where we talk about, oh, we need to advance women. And then like it comes out of the woodworks and everybody has a thing about women. But I'm like, are you really measuring progress? And does it mean something to you? So I feel having been a refugee, I can now see the traumas, how it shapes you into the woman you become. And, you know, little things like I can never call someone a best friend just because I lost so many people that I'm so afraid to say, like, you're my best friend, because it's like the world has taken so much away from me. So, but then that also meant that people could come in my life up to a certain point.
Yeah.
And then I had a wall.
Just and either to protect yourself.
I would completely disappear or somehow, some way, I would sabotage it because you could only come to a certain point. And for the longest time, I didn't realize what that was. Like, I remember having friends and they would, when grew up in New Brunswick and they went moving and they're crying. And I'm like, why are you crying? We're going to the, like, it's the next city. You just start a new life. You just, but that was that mentality of surviving, but never truly living and loving. So that also is teaching me that I need to work on that because that also makes a difference in my business, how much I allow people to come in and genuinely help and love me without me thinking, oh, either something will happen or it'll be taken away or I can't depend too much on it, so that I stop thinking about all the wrong things that could happen and genuinely enjoy all the right things that are happening. So I feel, you know, being a little girl at 11 years old and being a refugee and losing so much, there are so many limiting beliefs that are created within you without even noticing them. And then you wonder, like, why am I so messed up? But you don't think about it because all your life after that, you were grateful to be alive, grateful to survive. So your job is to work really hard and save the entire world, and you never have to think about yourself. So now it's like course correcting all that and then using my pain as fuel to genuinely make change in this world without forgetting that I need to love, to be loved, and to appreciate, and to also accept being appreciated.
So it seems like a trite question to ask you about overcoming fear, or what the last thing you've done that scared you, considering your story. So nevertheless, I'm going to ask you perhaps for a more recent example of something that you've done that, you know, at least you were bold, and then keeping that in mind, do you have a mantra or a favorite saying that helps you move forward in the face of maybe it's not fear, but at least sort of apprehension?
And you know what? I feel like this last 3 years of course, with creating Elevate International, it was definitely a bold move. And I can probably tell you that within the last year, I cannot tell you how many times someone or a leader was looking out for me and would say, Solange, you should cancel this event because there's so many other events that are happening in the city and you're a tiny fish and you will not have anyone. And it's almost like you have that thing in you where you're terrified of what do I do? But you know, deep down within you, if it's in your heart, it's meant to happen. But we second guess ourselves. So this year was all about executing all the things that I would say, I said that I would execute. And it's funny, not long ago, I was on a train. I was speaking in Montreal, then flying to Halifax for the Elevate Atlantic Canada conference.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. And I take this phone call because I saw the government of Nova Scotia. And this kind gentleman is saying, we're preparing the remarks for the premier, blah, blah, blah. We just have a few questions. And also the Minister of Status of Women, we just have a few questions. And then he goes, who are you in the organization? And then I said, actually, I'm the president and CEO.
It's me.
Like, well, that's great leadership. And in my head, I wanted to tell him, like, this is a very tiny but mighty organization. And sometimes it's almost like a one woman show. Yeah. But you know, it was just one of those things that I had to remove the fear and trust that if this mission is placed in my heart, then the way will be made. And I had to trust that over and over. And you know, like just even like when you came for our event, mm-hmm. I was as shocked as you are that there are 400 people in that room, because I was the only person sitting there sending all these invitations. And sometimes even my email would be blocked because I've sent too many invitations. And that was sort of the infancy phase of like, I need to be bigger. So, but then in a normal world, to create an event of that type of magnitude, you have to have had like a year plan, mm-hmm. and you have to have had like these sponsors that are like $50,000 sponsors. Like the biggest sponsor I had that day was $7,500. Mm-hmm. But it was
Is still congratulations. You still,
of course,
fantastic.
For me, it was
absolutely
like, yay.
And you had very influential people in attendance of those 400 people.
Exactly.
It was a packed room of key influencers for sure.
So I had to learn this year that in order to be fearless, I always tell in my head, put your courage pants on and go get it. And I tell myself that your courage pants, I just put my courage pants on and I just keep moving forward because I need to trust that it is meant to be and therefore it is going to work out. And my job is to trust in it and to work as hard as I can. So even if it never works out, thank God it hasn't, knock mm-hmm. on wood, mm-hmm. it has been always worked out. But even if it doesn't, I give it my absolute all.
Mm-hmm. And I'm making such a big impact along the way.
You know, I think it comes for, you probably have this too, because I think I'm starting to realize that all leaders do, is that no matter how big it is or no matter how amazing it is, you still feel like there's so much work to do. So it's almost like, okay, that was great. It wasn't a failure. Great. What's next? And how do we make it more meaningful? How do we start measuring, you know, progress?
Yeah.
And for me, it's that day where I'm sitting in front of you and I say, and I will say, Janice, because of the work we've done, there are more women who are leading multi-million dollar businesses. Because of what we've done, there are more women who are now VPs and senior executive, and they're sitting on boards and they're CEOs because of the work that we've done. And that keeps me focused.
So let's go back to a different journey and a hard one. You started an organization in memory of your daughter. Can you share the goal of the organization and talk about that?
Yeah, and so in 2013, I get pregnant with triplets, and it comes off. Of course, as a shock, because I didn't know that that was something that was even ever possible. You hear it, but then, I don't know, naturally, I'm like, how is that even possible? And then they're even identical. So going through that journey, which is quite a long journey, I think that's a whole other podcast in itself. Mm-hmm. Of caring,
which I'll have you back to share.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm learning to share my story because it helps. If it can help one more parent or one more woman or one more girl take space into owning this world and leading in the way that they can and that they should, then I'm all about sharing. So I get pregnant with these triplets, and throughout, you know, by like 6 months, of course, they've asked me to stop working and I've said no. Eventually, they're like, listen, we're going to keep you at the hospital because clearly you're not listening to us that you need to stop working. So I'm at the hospital for 2 months. And, you know, it's one of those things where you're checking the heart rates of the babies. Like, it's once a day. It finally gets to almost like every 2 hours we're checking how these babies are doing. Because I had also refused that they deliver them right away because I wanted to let them grow as much as they could. And on September 3rd, they're born, the most beautiful thing that has ever happened. Even though we're in a room of like a staff of 21 people, the Ottawa General Hospital was fully prepared for us. These girls are born, and I felt like every struggle, every, you know, ounce of effort that it has required to get us here was all worth it. But then one of our daughter passed away. Nyla passed away 2 weeks later. And it was almost like I had this perfect story and now it's taken away from me. And she doesn't just pass away like suddenly. It's like we go through hours and hours and hours of surgery where I get a glimpse of hope and then it's taken away. But then I can see the effort that this little tiny human being of 3 pounds is putting in. And I'm like, yeah, you're my girl. Like, you're my daughter. So she passes away. And I always say a part of me died that day completely. And I remember being so mad that I waking up the next day. And I wasn't mad because she had passed away, because we had walked through that journey together. I was mad because I was going to have to figure out how to breathe again and walk again in this world without her. And more importantly, with this new pain that I cannot comprehend. And for me, I felt that I was very fortunate because she passed away in my arms. I was very fortunate to know that people had fought for her along the way. And I was very fortunate that I had a supporting family, a husband who allowed me to make these decisions about our daughter and when we would finally make that decision to let her go. But then I also knew that every day there were 3,000 mothers who do not get to say, I was fortunate to say goodbye to my child. And the idea that this pain that I couldn't live with anymore and that I was so mad to have was something that was a norm to 3,000 mothers every day. Can you imagine what that is in a year,
no,
in 5 years? All of a sudden, it became so real. So I felt that creating Nyla's legacy with raising funds for premature babies and newborn babies that are born in the most unfortunate circumstance would at least was her way, was our daughter's way of keeping me in touch with the true need of this world, right? The most innocent human beings that are born and they do not have a chance to live the life that they're meant to live. So for me, it was filling my cup of knowing that there's a mom who get to go home with her baby and have the happy ending that we didn't get. But it also meant that there were more children who could actually have the life that they deserve. So, you know, I took a break from it last year just because I felt like it was very, very heavy for me to carry. And now I'm that place again where I'm approaching it with a sense of love. And that was my thing, because last year I was in so much pain. I missed her a lot. And I think I missed her a lot because now her sisters are 6 years old. And you hear them have conversations with like their neighbors. And they said, do you know that we're actually like four girls in our family? So they're mentioning their youngest sister was after them. So there's Aaliyah, there's Layla, and then there's our sister Nyla. She's in heaven. So those conversations, I wasn't ready for. I thought that the girls would start having those conversations when they're 13 or 15, when they're, right? But then it was like, even when I came back from South Africa, I was on their birthday after Mrs. Wald. They're like, Mom, Nyla would look like us today. And it's our birthday. And it's almost like, ugh, I wasn't ready. So last year, it was a surprise for me on how much you're very well connected to their sister. And now that I'm back in a place of love, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to serve in her honor.
Beautiful. Yeah. You mentioned, because this is, I think, very, to go in a completely different direction from this passion and channeling your pain so powerfully, to something very different, which are your titles. You said you just came back from, or recently you were back from South Africa. So this to me is surprising in your bio. You are Ms. Galaxy 2013, Miss Canada International, Miss United Nations, and Miss Canada Galaxy. So what made you pursue these titles? Because it was a surprising thing in your bio.
You know what? And for so long I hid that because I remember a man making a comment and asking me if I'm ever worried of people taking me seriously as a leader because I was a beauty queen. Mm-hmm. And that right away, like it was like, cut it. I took it out of my bios, of everything that I did. But it was a journey that taught me so much and that has made me the leader that I am today.
So, which, by the way, you're a UNICEF Canada's ambassador. So, really
that.
Powerful titles here that came from those other titles.
Right.
Yeah, tell us about all of it.
So I'm in New Brunswick. And of course, I was part of this committee. I was the vice president of the African Student Union. And every year we performed for the community. We had this event that's called, it's the African Night, and they still host it in New Brunswick at the UNB. And I was the vice president. And that year we decided to do something a little bit different where we were going to host somewhat of a beauty pageant, but it wasn't a beauty pageant, but it was a way for women to showcase the beauty of their culture. And I was amongst the participants, and we had a few professors that were going to be judges. But really, so I remember them giving us questions at the end, like it was a real beauty pageant. And I answered my question, and we're all laughing, having a great time. And I'm walking off the stage, and the person that was beside me said, "You just won." And in my head, I'm like, "Haha, we're kind of like kidding around." So then they crowned me this, like, I can't even remember what the title was. It was something like Miss Africa. Knight something. I honestly
your first title, because there's so many.
Someone was in the audience and comes to me and he said, "You should be Miss New Brunswick." I'm like, shut the front door. Like, I'm 21 years old. Most of these people have done this all their lives. Like, stop it. So the director calls me from Miss New Brunswick International. And I remember this guy, Mark. "Hi, so are you coming?" And I'm like, "Coming where?" "No." And then eventually I'm like, why not? And I literally remember telling my parents, it was a week before, I'm like, "So I'm going to Miss New Brunswick." And they're like,
"What?
What?" And it's like, "When are you going?" "Next Friday. Can you drive me?" And I knew nothing about pageants. I remember getting my friend Nat too. She came with me to Walmart. And we had to figure out nylons. If you look at my first ever photo as Miss New Brunswick, I'm wearing white people nylons because I didn't know that there was a color for nylons. So my legs are white and the rest of the body is black. Like it's just amazing. But I went and my parents drove me and I remember them saying, okay, well, how are you going to pay for this? I'm like, oh, I think at school, like when you're like first year, they give you this credit card that I've never used. I'm just going to swipe that. And they're just thinking, oh my gosh, clearly like we need to help this girl. So they drove me. And then it was like on the final night, I told them when to come and pick me up. I said, don't even bother coming. Just come and pick me up. I don't know where they decided that they were going to watch the show. So they came. And the show goes on, and then they're calling top 10, and they call my name. And I'm like, okay, this is a joke. And I always laugh at this because they say that my father was terrified that I was going to walk out in a swimsuit because he had never seen this. Like, it was just something that's like, oh, my gosh, what if she comes out in a swimsuit? So luckily for him, that was a competition we had done in private, and they were just announcing who the top 10s were. And then they announced me in top 5. And then I'm answering the question, and all of a sudden, they're like, the new Miss New Brunswick International is Solange. And this is in 2004. And I said, oh, my gosh, what does this mean? And they're like, what it means is you need to sign this contract. You're officially Miss New Brunswick, and you're going to go represent New Brunswick at Miss Canada International. And it just became this thing that I wasn't even...
You started on a whim.
Right. So I go to Miss Canada International, and the first year I finish as first runner-up.
Which is huge.
It was huge, but it killed me.
Why?
Because it made me wonder, what is it that didn't make me first? What is that one thing that made a difference between the winner and myself?
And
it just...
What was it?
I think sometimes, like they say, different days, different
right.
judges.
Yeah. Okay.
But
I thought you were going to say, I knew, and then I found out, but no.
No, it's just in okay. my head... That's the thing that just kept eating me. And for someone who was playing competitive soccer for so long, that competitiveness kicks in. Is like, even though I'm a newbie, but what was it? Like, I almost made it. So I remember meeting the owner of Miss Canada International the following year. And she said, you know, you've been such a wonderful Miss New Brunswick. We would love to invite you back. And I'm like, oh, okay. Sure.
Chance number two.
So this time when I went, yeah. I was like, yes.
It's go time.
Like, I'm focused. What do I need to do to, like, make sure that I'm as prepared as possible? And that's how I became Miss Canada International.
And then
from there, it was, like, just a few invitations to represent Canada. And the first, I went to Miss International. That was my first international competition. Oh my gosh, I butchered that. I wasn't even in the top something. I didn't know what competing internationally looked like.
How is it different?
Oh, these girls come in like full on, bio ready. They've done volunteer work. Like,
what is bio ready?
Like, you have to have your biography.
Oh, bio. Okay.
Yeah,
yes.
So
okay.
Like, it's like your biography needs to be impeccable. Your work in the community. Your leadership skills,
you have
your
all
interview
those things.
Skills,
I
your presentation skills. But these are things that I learned because of pageant.
I see.
Right? So as I continued, when I went and I was like, oh my gosh, like it's like going to the Olympics, but you've only been training at like, right, locally. So, but it taught me what hard work looked like, what presentation looked like, what interview skills look like, what building a community looks like, and what the work that it requires. And then from there on, it was just one competition to the other. And then, you know, I became Miss United Nations, and then I went on and I did Galaxy, and I did fairly well. And then as a mom, I embarked in the Mrs. category, which it was scary for me, right? It's like, how do you go? And you're in this sort of arena with some women who have never had children and some who have had children, but then you have like, you know, your saggy chest because you're nursed and you're stretch marked. But it gave me the opportunity to embrace who we are, as women and our imperfections, how they're actually sort of our how would I say it? It's almost like our wounds and scars and everything in between is what becomes our power.
Mm-hmm.
Because
our strength.
You know where they mm-hmm. come from mm-hmm. and you know what the meaning of it. So now I'm no longer afraid.
And then UNICEF Canada's ambassador too.
Right. Because wow. As a title holder, everybody wanted to say, you know, world peace. But I knew what that meant because I had been a girl who sat in a refugee camp. So world peace was real for me. It was, I don't want to see family members be killed. I don't want to ever see another young girl, you know, sitting in a refugee camp and never going to school. I never want to see chaos in a community. So world peace meant something for me. So when I became Miss Canada International, I reached out to UNICEF and I said, you know, I slept in your tent as a refugee. I carried water in some of the containers that you give, and I would love to volunteer for you. And they're like, well, tell us a bit of your story. And then I worked with them a bit, and they're like, oh my gosh, we'd love to have you as an ambassador. And that was such a shock for me because ambassador is such a big role. But it was one that I take very seriously, which is why when someone ever asked me to be an ambassador, I want to make sure that I can truly serve in a meaningful way versus having a title that's serving me. Because I think it's the one time where it's completely all about serving and nothing at all about me.
So what's something you wish you knew earlier, Solange, even though it seems like you've got everything figured out?
I think for me, I would have wished to know that trauma is real. That trauma is real. And that as much as we turn into our wounds into our wisdom, that there's still space for that trauma and how we deal with it, how we allow for it to not to heal, because I think those are moments that you can never change, to give it meaning and purpose in a way that serves us to be better leaders in our society. And I would have wished for someone to call me a leader at a young age.
Oh, I love that.
Because I wouldn't have felt so abnormal for wanting more with very little. So I think as we move forward, I think more men and women need to call each other leaders, and more girls need to be called leaders from a very young age. Even if she's just selling lemonade and made $5, attach the word leadership to what she just did, because she took an initiative to do something amazing and something bold and something that was out of her comfort zone.
With trauma and pain and the kind of experiences you've had, what advice do you have for others in overcoming or even acknowledging or, you know, getting through it?
I think my biggest thing is making space for it and acknowledging it. See, even in Canada right now, we're in a place where we have so many immigrants and refugees coming in who have suffered tremendously. Mm-hmm. And as immigrants, we tend to go in this space right away of survival, build a better future for your children, and make a better life without complaining. And having this space for our traumas and our pain, it's not complaining. It actually allows us to understand what that is so that we can even be better parents, better citizens, and just better human beings for ourselves. And that also goes for women. Women, we tend to do that a lot more of, we nurture for everyone. We take care of everyone. And we last. And when it comes to men, as I've watched, you know, men in my family go through a lot of trauma, like losing your mother or losing your sister, and then to go on to watch my husband lose a daughter, I think it's being okay with being emotional. And we need to start teaching our young boys that it's okay to cry, it's okay to say I'm hurting, it's okay to say you hurt my feelings, and it's okay to say I'm really sad. This idea that you need to be strong and not show emotions and fix things. So women were nurturing and men are just fixing things most of the time. But it's okay to just have space for it and to also acknowledge that if a man cries, you're not going to say, oh, he was weak. We also need to take ownership on how we are loving our men in carrying their pain and trauma and everything else. That if they have that moment of, oh my gosh, like I'm really feeling it today, that we say, talk to me. Let me love you. Let me hold you. And let me walk with you through it. And the same thing as women, that when you say, I'm taking time for me, that the world doesn't call you selfish, that he actually applauds you for you taking the time to take care of yourself within so that we can all be better people for our society.
So deeply moving this conversation. Final question, Solange. What is your dream for Canada?
I love this place. And you know what? It's moments like when we have Pride Day and you see so many people in our community just coming together and saying, we are different. So my dream for Canada is for us to have those moments for every community. When it comes to women advancing as leaders, when it comes to girls believing they're leaders, and more importantly, when it comes to First Nations, I want to see more women, First Nations, saying, yes, I am leading and I'm leading in our society without feeling like I only lead in the First Nation community, because they have these leadership skills that we need to tap into. So my dream for Canada is when we start saying the most influential, most powerful, most amazing top 100 leaders, we're seeing them across the board. The diversity is strong and it's brilliant and it's excellent, but more importantly, it's competent, because I think we've associated competency with certain people, but we have so many competent people that have the amazing skills and that lead differently, and we're not tapping into those leaders. And if we truly want diversity in a meaningful way that will last for generations to come, my dream for Canada is to see those top 100 as diverse as it comes.
It's a beautiful dream for Canada. Diversity really is our strength.
It is. And we don't take the time to appreciate it. But we truly should, because we live in this, I sometimes call it a bubble when I see what's happening around the world. So since we live in it, let's celebrate it more often.
Mm-hmm. Well, Solange Touahri-Eshime, such a remarkable woman, an empowering and inspiring conversation. I'm deeply moved by having you here on the Fearless Women podcast today. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. And more importantly, thank you for calling me fearless, because you just add an ounce of courage in my life.
And also, on a final note, I'm getting myself some courage pants.
That's right. I love it. Perfect.
Thank you again, Solange.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We want our community to grow. Tell your friends, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter at fearlesswomenpodcast.com to get the early scoop. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or in your favorite app. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star rating. I'm Janice McDonald. Stay fearless. Thank you to the 30% Club Canada for your support of the Fearless Women Podcast. The 30% Club believes that gender balance on boards and in senior management not only encourages better leadership and governance, but diversity further contributes to better all-around board performance and ultimately increased corporate performance for both companies and their shareholders. Want to learn more? Visit their website, 30%club.org, and select the Canada chapter to find out about membership, supporters, and key resources. Thank you to BDC, the bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. We love smart companies that want to amplify women's voices. For more information, go to bdc.ca/women.